Hello and welcome to the Industry Leaders Podcast, where we talk to the leaders of some of the most exciting retail and direct brands and learn the real stories behind their success, their challenges and their plans for the future. I'm Sarah Cole-Boyle and this podcast is brought to you by More2, the marketing science people. On the show with me this week is Georgia Metcalf, founder of French Bedroom and finalist in the 2021 NatWest Every Woman Awards. Now, French Bedroom, for anyone who hasn't come across it yet, is one of the most beautiful interiors brands I think I've ever seen. Their whole product set is just gorgeous. And it was featured in Bridgerton, which should tell you everything you need to know. Georgia, it is brilliant to have you here. How are you?
Oh, thank you. I'm really well. Thanks, Erica. And actually, that was a really kind, goosebumpy introduction. Thank you. It's lovely to hear those words. Thank you very much.
And you know, I've enjoyed kind of learning more about the brand so much because I've just spent hours on your Instagram and your website just kind of wanting to hop into all of the beds that you have.
You can lose more than a few moments on the site, can't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Just keep doing what you're doing because it's great. I'd love to hear about the early days of the brand, you know, where it came from, what you wanted to achieve with it, and why beds and why French beds in particular?
Well, I mean, I suppose it depends how far back I go, really, but I started my career in PR and I came to realise quite quickly that it was the interior side of things that I loved. So it was working for interiors brands and clients and companies more than actually the PR side of things. Of course, I really enjoyed the PR, but it was the corporate side of things. It was the numbers, the facts, the figures, the commercials that actually I really enjoyed. And getting under the hood of a brand and understanding how their customers bought, why they bought, when, where they bought, what they bought, and all the analysis that went behind it. And so I decided actually, rather than sort of do PR for someone else and make their company successful, I would give it a go and start my own and see if I could use my PR skills and my contacts and my love for business, corporate and commercial, to actually see if I can make my own company successful. And all I was missing was the product.
Right.
It always begins with product, but actually for me, it began with business and the customer and the way he or she shopped. So then I suppose the stars somewhat aligned because it was my 30th birthday and my parents were thinking, you know, what should we get you? My whole family were thinking, what should we get you? You're not very easy to buy for. And I was like, oh, I would really love a new bed, actually. I'd love a French style one. And I couldn't find one. So there was my kind of light bulb moment of actually, this is the product that the UK doesn't have. If I can source it, it's a product that I feel very passionate about. This could be it. So yeah, found some suppliers, found manufacturers. I realized fairly early on that selling antiques online wasn't going to be feasible because the French beds are different sizes. They're kind of 4 foot instead of 4'6", which is our standard UK double. Also, they were 200-300 years old, so fairly creaky. There were some cases of woodworm. Hair oils, and not just decades of generations, but centuries of hair oil on silk headboards isn't a look. So we knew quite quickly that we would need to make a fresh French version of the beautiful antiques I'd been looking at. And also, I was super aware that there were huge demands on females and women's time, you know, working so hard and being mothers. On top of that, running and managing the house. In the main part, of course, there's many families and households where the dad or the father or the husband does that. But in the main part, it was what the woman had to do. This is back in 2006. So I realised that actually we were so incredibly time poor. And so being able to offer furniture purchasing online was, I mean, I never like to use the word disruptive because it has somewhat negative connotations. I didn't intend to disrupt the industry. I was simply intending to make life easier for really busy working mums. That's how it came about. And I guess here we are 16 years later. And there's been loads of bumps and humps and challenges and successes along the way. And I guess no 7-year-old child ever says, "Mummy, when I grow up, I really want to be a business owner." You sometimes just find yourself falling into it through a marketing route or a CFO route or CMO. But actually, I wouldn't look back. I wouldn't change anything. And I would speak to my 12-year-old daughter about owning her own business and having those goals in her sight because I enjoy every day at French Bedroom. But we've recently rebranded. We are now French Bedroom, not the French Bedroom Company. Another tip on the 2022 list.
Yeah, that's fabulous. I mean, everything from kind of the problem you're solving for yourself. And also, I think when you speak, it sounds like you have a genuine empathy for your customer. Can you tell me a little bit more about her? Because I'm looking at your reviews, they're mostly from women and it's a very feminine kind of site in your designs. And so can you tell me about your customer? You know, who is she? How do you design for her? How do you connect with her?
We're really proud that our beds are designed by women for women. We're one of the only brands who designs furniture by women for in. So that's something that we are really pleased with and proud of. But actually, we know that our customers are really style conscious, so that they will want a bed that will last forever, but they'll want to also change it with the trends or with the seasons or with their guests. They aren't necessarily cash poor, but they want to have the feeling they've got a product that no one else has. Just been to a large department store and bought the bed, the matching chest of drawers, matching armoire, bedside tables. So they really want to sort of feel like they have put together a really curated look that potentially could have come from a market in Paris, and they could have bought the bed on honeymoon, or they could have bought the bedside a year later. So it needs to be a look that has been carefully considered. We do try and communicate that through our styling. So we might get a really classic, beautifully designed bed and then pair it with slightly modern curtains, cushions, bed linen, bedside lights, to give customers the opportunity to see that the look can be changed with the seasons and the trends. I think for us, sustainability is really, really important. And by producing a bed that customers can enjoy for decades, and we talk about customers buying a bed that can pass from their children and their children's children, that kind of represents the quality of our beds. It's not a disposable item you're going to buy again in 2 years' time. It's a forever bed for your forever home, and then change the accessories so that you can feel that you've still got that aesthetic. So that's the kind of customer aesthetic. But in terms of who our customer is, the demographic, we've probably got two types of customer. One slightly older, perhaps an empty nester, and the other one is sort of slightly younger, 30s or early 40s, a couple of children, and just wants to have the perfect aesthetic in her forever home, but hasn't got time to buy twice. Looking for quality, looking for style, and looking for help with styling. And we do offer free interior styling as well for our customers. We put together mood boards for them so they know which items to coordinate and style together. Our items are, they're classic style, classic French style, but done in a really fresh, timeless way.
Yeah, I think it's a balance that you strike really well, because, you know, if you were to have a room that was full in a very kind of antique-y style furniture, the furniture can sometimes overpower the room. And then that's kind of...
Yeah, totally. You know, something.
It doesn't quite work.
You don't know which bit to look at, because everything's screwed for attention. So you've got a finial there and a fluted column there and a kind of carved acanthus crest over there. And then you've got the lovely, gorgeous French silks. So everything's screaming, look at me. So you actually, you know, want to have a couple of pieces of key focus and then build the other items and elements and scheme around it.
Absolutely. And the thing I'm really interested in, particularly with kind of premium e-commerce brands, you know, where the customer can't kind of come and touch and feel as easily as maybe they can in, you know, I don't know, Zara Home or H&M or something like that. How do you build an emotional connection with your customers when they're making such a considered and such a personal purchase? Because it's not just like buying a pair of shoes. You know, it's something, like you said, that they're going to have for so long.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. And there's a few answers to that. At the key of what we do that I think we do slightly differently to other brands is that conversational commerce is so important to us. We don't hide behind a URL or a chatbot or even an email address. We have a phone number and we answer our phones, and we don't put customers on hold. There isn't a queuing system. There is a voicemail, but it very rarely gets used because the phone is answered by anyone in any department. If it's ringing, it gets answered. And we all sit in one room and we all know our products inside out, and we all know the systems and the process and the delivery process inside out, so we're able to help customers. But we have our core customer service team. We actually call them CX, customer experience team. But conversational commerce is very much at the heart of our customer experience and getting to know our customers. So knowing what life stage they're at, whether they're about to move home or whether they're expecting a baby, knowing all the personal elements of how they live. Do they like the kids coming in the bed with them? Are they happy to have all the dogs come in on a Sunday morning? Do they want a really big mattress? They might then want a holstered headboard if they're going to have the dogs to come jumping in the bed, or even a rattan headboard. So understanding how they live, that sort of sometimes sets us apart from other brands, because we really want to make it the right decision. Because again, like I said earlier, it's a decision they're not going to make every year, every couple of years. In fact, I always talk to anyone who comes into the business as part of the training. I always say that buying a bed from us, I equate to buying a wedding dress. It's something you think a lot about. You know, it's kind of like the bed of your life, wedding dress of your life. Hopefully you're not buying one too often. You're probably going to spend about the same amount of money. It's kind of 1.5 to 2,000 plus, potentially. And you're going to measure and measure. You're going to speak to your mum and your auntie and your sister and your best friend. And you're going to speak to as many people as will listen. And it's a very considered, evaluated decision. And you'll spend a long time in that research evaluation stage. So the consideration time from click to converting can be months, if not years. And so during that time, we need to be on that journey with the consumer and the customer, whether it's email journeys or whether it's phone calls, or whether it's putting their, if they've already converted and they already are a customer, it's keeping their goods on hold for them and keeping their items stored for free in our warehouse, so that when they get their keys, if their house sales fallen through, we're ready to deliver when they want to receive the items. And I think another way that we connect with our customers in a sort of on an emotional sphere is that when we style our photographs, we try and think about the usability of how they're actually going to be used in their room. We want to provide visual information of the product so the customer really understands how they're going to look in their bedroom. Not just a beautifully curated and styled image, but a style image that actually makes them think that, yeah, this is the bed for me, and I can realistically create that look in my home. And that will work with my 2 Labradors and my 3 crazy kids and all of the other things that we have going on in our mad house.
Yes.
We try to think about the end use as well. Then there's a few other elements that we have to our service, and that we call our customers once they've made an order. We call them to say thank you for the order. This is going to be the delivery process. This is what happens next. Are there any shoes off areas in your house? Are there any delivery restrictions? Double red lines if it's London. And then we call them just before delivery as well, just to remind them what's going to happen. And if it's a white glove delivery, to let them know it's going to be unwrapped and take the packaging away, etc. So having that very personal service, I think, again, helps them to realise that we are more than just a URL. There is really a personality and an emotion behind our brand and behind the screen. And ultimately, we really love getting to know our customers, and buying a bed is a bit of a milestone in their lives. You don't buy a £2,000-£3,000 bed every day. So it's going to be something that you're going to want to share with your friends and kind of ring them up and say, I did it. I bought that bed. And here it is. Here's a photo. Come and have a look in my bedroom and come and see it. We know that a great customer experience produces many ambassadors for you, who will go around and evangelize, if we get it right, about the service and the products, and that helps us with our marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you've preempted my next question, because, you know, I don't think I've ever heard of a customer journey that's as hands-on as that. I mean, obviously, because the logistics of getting a bed into a house are obviously more than just new deliveries, some clothes or something like that. But I'm really interested in how you build that brand loyalty over time, especially as the bed purchase is so, so big, but then you also have your other products as well. How do you kind of build that brand loyalty to get people to come back and, you know, to buy their bed linen or their, you know, whatever else it is that they need to finish furnishing their room? How do you manage the customer lifecycle from bed to supplementary products?
It's a great question, because often it's bed to supplementary, and other times it's cushion to bed linen to chair to bed as their budget allows and their salary increases from, you know, their first job in their 20s. And they might just say, this is a brand I really want to connect with, this brand I want to have in my home. I can't afford that £2,000 bed yet, or I'm in a one bedroom flat in London and there's no point in me having that bed yet because the room's too small for the king size bed I want. So they'll buy a cushion and they'll interact and have that customer service with us at that point. So we hope that we are forming a bond with them so that we're front and centre for when they do come and buy a bed and when they're ready at that life journey. But to answer your question of how do you go from bed to cushion or bed to smaller items, when we deliver a bed, a few days later, we send a surprise gift to our customers in the post. And it's a box of branded products that we don't sell on our website. So there isn't a perceived value. And it's some really personalised items that we have made by a supplier of ours. Actually, it's someone who used to work here and went off to be a mum. But yeah, we still get to work with her, which is absolutely, it's really lovely. It's really personal. And she puts them together, wraps them in tissue paper, puts the stickers on, and then wraps them in brown paper and string and stamps them up, goes to the post office each week with them. So it really is a really personal service. And I think that the idea that someone will get a little box of treats that they weren't expecting, it wasn't necessary. You know, we're just doing it because we wanted to complete their journey with a really lovely surprise and delight kind of gift. We often get some really lovely personal emails back saying thank you, and it was just what I needed. It was just, the timing was perfect. I really needed those products inside. It's just after the last couple of years. But of course, it's a thank you to our lovely customers. And if they've spent over £1,000, then I kind of feel like they deserve a box of goodies. It's not crazy expensive. It's the thought more than the product, I think. We wanted to leave a really lovely sweet taste with our customers so that they have this kind of lasting feeling of connection with us as a brand. And you know, in an ideal world, they'd go away and they tell their friends and sisters and mums and say, you know, this is the amazing thing that happened to me from French Bedroom, and perhaps come back to us, or they might spread the joy and then we get more customers as a result of it. But really what we wanted to do was form a relationship and a connection so that our customers felt like they could ring us and say, oh, hi, Abby, Celine in customer service, how are you? And oh, I've still got my new bed, I still love it, I'm looking for the bedside table. So as their family grows, as their bedroom grows, we're there for them. And we have to meet that by having the right product range. So we don't just sell beds and furniture, we sell room fragrance, we sell side lamps, chandeliers, ceiling pendants, wall lights, mirrors, bed linen. We've got over 60 different throws and bedspreads. We've got about 80 different designs of cushions that we sell. So yeah, we'll probably never get that same huge order value again. The average order values will drop as the customer lifetime extends. But we've still got that customer. We haven't had to pay to acquire that customer because the initial outlay was for their very first order value anyway. And also we make sure that our products are on trend and that, you know, if there is a new aesthetic, for example, you know, green is the colour of the season at the moment, the kind of lovely sage greens, pale blues. We've got a ton of sage green and pale blues in the bedlands and the cushions, keeping them fresh and current so that when a customer is looking for that trend piece, we're there and we're front and centre and there it is on our new page, there it is on our trends page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic. I think actually I might have to buy a bed just to get that experience.
We'd love you to. Thanks.
Yeah, possibly slightly outside my budget right now, but I'll get there one day.
Well, you know, buy the cushion and we'll give you the experience. And you'll know.
One thing that I'm really interested to hear, I suppose more so in the context of the last 2 years and the last few months as well, is managing customer expectations, you know, when there are things happening outside your control that are impacting your supply lines. And it's something that all retailers of all sizes are confronted with right now. I'd love to hear your approach to it.
It's not been easy. It's been really hard. And anyone who works in retail will tell you the problems we've had with supply and demand over the last 24 months, I think. Every retailer went through a lack of supply during COVID, especially the interiors retailers, because everyone was sitting at home looking at their bedrooms or their front rooms saying, I need new cushions, I need new bed linen, I could do with a new bed, and I've got nothing else to spend my money on because my holidays have all been cancelled, and I can't go out to nice restaurants with my friends, so I will buy a new bed. That was fantastic, but of course supply dried out. Then we experienced the flip where we had now too much product. I mean, it's fine, we're dealing with it, it's no problem, but it's a nice problem to have if you've got the cash flow to manage it. But yeah, during the dry days of supply, do you remember the goods being stuck in the Suez Canal, those shipping containers? We had a couple of containers on the ever given ship, and I just remember getting this phone call from the shipping agent saying, your containers are on the ever given, are you sitting down? I was like, gosh, okay, all right. Throw another couple on my way, it's fine. We've had our fair share of the last couple of years and good. I've learned so much. And I have an amazing leadership team, amazing. And I couldn't have got through the last 2 years without them. So call them into what became our situation room. And I think we got a pot of tea and maybe a bottle of wine or two. And we sat down and we called every single customer personally who was affected, because we knew that they'd already probably experienced a delay with the furniture in production because there were delays of raw materials. There were delays of factory closures. We struggled to get a shipping container actually. And this container, I think it was this one, was one of the containers that Topshop had cancelled because they'd gone bust just shortly before. So we were lucky to get that container, but then of course it was a doomed container because it was on the doomed vessel. So yeah, we sat down, we went through every customer, we worked out the list of who was worst affected, and the leadership team took everyone who was affected and I took the worst delays. And I knew that as a business owner, I just simply had to call them and apologise and explain and be transparent and be honest and say, this is what we're facing. But as a business, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to treat the situation. The whole throughout the delay, we'll be with you. We'll be by your side. We'll be talking to you about the products. Of course, you can cancel. And of course, you can choose another bed. The stark reality, I think, at the time was that actually our poor customers, there weren't many other beds from them to choose from. And that's not just with us. That's with our competitors and other retailers out there. Supply had dried up almost nationwide because even beds that were made in the UK couldn't get raw materials. There was a foam shortage, there was a cotton shortage, there was a springs shortage. So it was very difficult. But again, it comes back to what we were talking earlier about, and that is customer service and customer connection and that relationship that you build with your customer and it being based around trust. And we were asking our customers ultimately to trust us. You know, they had an order of £2,000-£4,000 and they just had to trust that it was going to arrive. The good thing about our items being stuck in the Suez Canal, if I can find one, is that it was widely publicised in the news about this infamous photographs of this infamous vessel being stuck sideways across this huge, ginormously wide canal. And at least it meant that everyone we called, we could give a genuine excuse rather than just, oh, your furniture's delayed. It's actually your furniture in that container on that vessel sitting sideways, blocking one of the world's largest shipping routes. In fact, it's like the world's second largest shipping route. So it gave them a talking point. And actually, it was the weekend before the pubs opened. It was the Friday night that we were making these calls. And the pubs opened again on the Saturday. And I guess at least they could turn around and say, we know my furniture's on that back. That shipping container in that canal. So it wasn't making light of it in any way, but it was a realistic business problem that we had. And we knew that we simply needed to put some leadership power behind it to make some really genuine, empathetic phone calls explaining the situation, the scenario. So of course it was force majeure, it was something outside of our control, but you need to put a human side behind what's happening, because at the end of the day, your customers, of course they care about factories in India not being able to work in the heat or not being able to work because of floods. Of course they care because of shutdowns and lockdowns in Shanghai and across China. And of course they care about shipping routes being blocked, but at the end of the day, they just want their furniture. And you get shouted at, because to them it's black and white. They haven't got the furniture, they ordered it, the money's in your bank account, not theirs, the bed's not in their bedroom where it should be. And so I get it, but I think being understanding and knowing that they're cross and they don't work in your industry, so where would they? But you know, we did have customers who said, actually my goods are on the same vessel. So we made some lovely connections with our customers as well. Some really lovely stories that came out of those phone calls that night. But I don't think I'll ever forget that night in business as long as I live, sitting in the Situation Room with a leadership team. They were absolutely amazing. And they're still with me to this day. We've been in the trenches together.
Yeah, and that's really an extraordinarily vulnerable position to put yourself in when you're the person picking up the phone and saying, this is my company and this is the problem that we have and I'm being really honest with you. Yeah, it must have been an extraordinary experience.
Yeah, I think that situation warranted that. The problem was so enormous and the outcome so heinous that, you know, we were saying, sorry, we've got a 12-week delay because all of our furniture is made to order. Well, we store it in the warehouse, but it had sold out. The warehouse items in stock sold out, so all of the stock had to be remade, which takes 6 weeks, and then the shipping took 6 weeks under normal circumstances, but actually at that time shipping was taking kind of 12 to 14 weeks. So the situation really dictated that we implemented that scenario, and I wasn't going to give one of my CX team those phone calls to make. It wouldn't have been fair. Also think that it might have come across as less or more disingenuous because it was me, the owner, calling that poor customer saying, I'm sorry. So in a way, that potentially held a bit more weight.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a customer, you would appreciate that vulnerability and honesty and you're saying, look, this is just the way it is and I'm sorry. But
yeah, I think from memory, there were about 58 customers and I think one cancelled. I think we managed to retain the other 57.
I mean, that's extraordinary.
Yeah, it was extraordinary. It really was. It says a lot about my leadership team.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell me more about that team?
Yeah, sure. So we've got Holly, who heads up brand, who's very much my right-hand lady. Holly joined us 2 years ago. And I'm lucky enough to work with my husband, Ben. So he's operations. So he manages everything that sits within operations. So whether it's compliance or tech or partners, 3PLs. And then we have Abby, who's head of CX and very much a solutionizer for any problems that come in. There isn't a problem you can't throw at Abby that she won't be able to solutionize. And then there's Philip, who's been with us for 9 years. And Philip is an absolute data guru. What he can do with Excel, the macros, pivot tables, I mean, the quadruple ifs that he does in a few seconds. It's amazing. I can dream up some data I want to see, and within half an hour, it's on my desk. So I can go super granular in every kind of vertical of the business, and it's there within half an hour. So it is actually, it's alchemy as far as I'm concerned, because of course I can do Excel, can't run a business without, but I'm not a whiz at Excel, and his brain is, it's enormous. So we're really grateful to have him. And his years within the business have meant that he understands our systems so deeply that he's actually created systems within our systems that's enabled us to automate a lot of the order process. So that removes the error rate. Also means that the CX team can get on with developing those personal relationships with the customers, whether it's personal styling or just understanding about the customer's time of life and what their needs are, rather than trying to input data into a system, because that's all automated and being taken care of by Philip. So yeah, we're a leadership team of five at the moment.
Sounds like you've really surrounded yourself with brilliant people.
Yeah, I couldn't be luckier. I really, honestly, they are the best in the industry. They're amazing. It's great. We've got a really good connection as well. We have time off-site as well to go through our vision for the next quarter or half.
Fantastic. And you know what I love is how you really just kind of brightened up once you started talking about the people.
Yeah, no, my people are everything. And do you know, I always say to anyone who I employ, I always say, I love my kids. I love my kids so much that I would love to be a full-time mum. But the one thing that stops me is my love for the company and the brand and the people. And that's said with real authenticity, as I really do genuinely love coming to work. It's great. It's a really nice atmosphere. It's lots of fun. Problems happen. We all muck in together. We have a difficult customer on the phone. There's cups of tea and cuddles afterwards. You know, we are all a big force, but the skill set and the loyalty is amazing in this team. I've never worked at a company like French Bedroom, actually.
You must be so proud.
I'm so, so proud. So, yeah, I really am.
And if you were to look back and say, pick out one or two moments that you're most proud of during the business, would you be able to pick something?
Oh, yeah, I would say definitely the performance culture of the team and the happy culture. And one of our company values is to work hard and have fun, and that we embrace change. We're agile. So, yeah, I think our performance culture is something I'm really proud of. And I thank Holly for that. She's very responsible for getting that culture to where I always wanted it to be. And, you know, we really encourage ideas. There's no red tape. There's no no's. We don't say no to ideas. Everyone's encouraged to put forward ideas. And this morning we had a marketing meeting, and actually we took someone from CX and said, come on in, you know, give us your thoughts. And of course, she comes up with brilliant things, and marketing's not her thing, but she's got ideas, and it's great to see marketing from her side of the fence, from the customer service side of things. So yeah, ideas are very received and encouraged, and I'm really proud to work and manage an atmosphere like that. I think that positive, kind leadership really encourages a space for creativity and collaboration, and where those two can really flourish. And also using our female emotional intelligence as well, having empathy and being firm, of course, when it needs to be the situation where it's dealing with difficult scenarios. But when it comes to our team, being calm, but also really caring about how they feel and about what's right for them. I also, we are about 90% female, and I think females do really understand each other. I think that we can communicate really effectively. That sparks a really empowering atmosphere within a meeting room. And, you know, you'll start off with some giggles, but actually quite often females will almost understand each other without having to explain what we mean. And sometimes I can kind of say, oh, I really like that because it reminds me of a product we used it a few years ago. And someone will say, oh, yes, this product. I kind of think, wow, you know, we've probably got an archive of 3,000 products. How did you know that one? It's lovely to see how in tune with each other. I'm really proud to work in an environment that, I don't want to use the bad word of empowering females, but I really mean it. I'm really proud to work with some really strongly skilled, powerful, empathetic, kind, successful females. I mean, for me, it wasn't easy starting off in business, actually. I worked for a couple of male-dominated companies in my early 20s. And in fact, I was told by one of them in my leaving card to stay away from the PC if I wanted a successful career. I think that for me was just fuel into my fire of, I'm going to do something, I'm going to make a difference. And I feel like it's my responsibility to help carve out a path. So, you know, I've got a 12-year-old daughter, so she can believe that she can do anything she wants to do in her career without being told she has to stay away from a computer. So I would say that's one of the things that I'm really proud of achieving.
You should be proud, because each one of those things is really incredible. One thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, had mentors or people who inspire you. Seeing you speak a little bit about Anita Roddick from The Body Shop before, you know, what was it from her that kind of speaks to you?
I felt she was really before her time. I thought that what she wanted to, her environmental campaigning, her environmental issues. I remember being 13 years old and going to the Body Shop and buying these little glass pots of lip balm. And they were doing loads of projects with third world company countries or LEDCs. And their use of packaging, the non-use of chemicals in their products was exemplary. And it felt like the world wasn't quite ready. And I think that in many ways, it's comparable with where Lush are today, and Lush are amazing. I think that where she lives today, she'd been doing some amazing things in business with her passion for environmental issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree. How can businesses like French Bedroom insulate themselves against the shocks that are maybe coming that we can't foresee? You know, whether it be global supply chain problems with the war in Ukraine or COVID or whatever it is. I mean, listening to you about your communication with your leadership team, you know, listening to people having the empathy. What is it, do you think, that businesses can put in place now to set themselves up in the face of these kind of adverse events that we might not
know? The things that you think are never going to happen. Exactly. It's never going to be a worldwide pandemic. We're never going to run out of stock. In fact, it's never going to be forced to be closed. It's never going to happen. But yeah, I mean, gosh, yeah, from everything I've mentioned, in floods in India to extreme temperatures of nearly 50 degrees in India and constant lockdowns in China. And yeah, everything and anything, energy crisis, fuel crisis, Ukraine and Russia and American unrest. I think there's two things that we, I suppose, to realise that the one constant is going to be change, and to realise that actually when you have everything's fine, everything's running like clockwork, that's when you need to consider scenario planning, making sure that you are not change resistant, that you've got, for example, before lockdown, we were really lucky because we just flipped everyone to laptops, so everyone could work remotely. So when lockdown happened, we actually said, it's fine, let's just carry on as normal. We didn't have Teams at the time, we had Slack. We moved to Teams within the first week of lockdown. But yeah, we all had laptops, so it was kind of business as usual, really, during lockdown. So thinking about not being change resistant, realising that change can happen, does happen, and will happen, and that being agile has got to be part of your business architecture. It's got to be part of what you consider. You can't rest on your laurels. because goodness knows those poor companies who did, you know, I think when the tide's going out, you can see he's been swimming naked. I think that was a quote from Warren Buffett. Yes. And yeah, you can't as a brand these days rest on your laurels. You need to be constantly thinking about your consumer, constantly thinking about your team, constantly thinking about technological change, constantly watching your competitors, but also looking at how you can make business improvements, whether it's Philip and his amazing automation, or whether it's Abby forming connections with her customer service team and then her customers. But I think relationships is probably the key to future-proofing your business. That's what I would say is the biggest takeaway, is that actually your relationships are what will keep you going in times of austerity, whether it's relationships with the suppliers and your factories and your manufacturers, or whether it's relationships with your 3PLs, or whether it's relationships with your team or your customers, your agents, your agencies, and making sure that, you know, you've been in the trenches together and you've got that relationship, and humanizing those relationships. It's not just, you know, please know we have, it's sort of, how are you? How are your kids? And meaning it, not disingenuous, but actually really meaning in an authentic way. How are you? Are you okay? Has it been all right for you? I love going to conferences and to exhibitions and events because there's so many friendly faces. We've been doing it for 10, 15, 20 years and we've been through real hardships together. And I have a million questions I'd love to ask my peers. How's it been for you? What did you do? How was it on your side of the fence? And I can learn from them. Or maybe they could learn from us. It'd be nice if we could help. But yeah, it's all about relationships at the end of the day, because when everything is up in the air and the dust comes down again, or the juggling balls come down again, you want to know that you've got strong relationships and good people by your side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Georgia, on that note, I'm going to wrap it up. Listen, thank you so much. I've enjoyed our chat so, so much.
Me too. I've really enjoyed speaking to you as well. Thank you so much, Sarah. It's been lovely to see you and hear you.
That was the brilliant Georgia Metcalf of French Bedroom. Huge thanks to Georgia for joining me on this week's episode of the Industry Leaders Podcast, and to you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show, and if you'd like to hear more conversations like this with other retail and travel leaders, check out our previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for this week. So from me, Sarah Cole Boyle, and the crew at More Tube, thanks for listening, and we'll see you very soon.